I'm Lester Holt.
Are you ready to rock?
Yeah, man.
All right, we got another Thursday Dateline for you. Did Lester call it a Thursday Dateline this time? I don't think he did.
I don't think so.
Here's Dennis Murphy with Dangerous Secret.
But it's another shorty, another Thursday. And I'm beginning to have opinions of shorties and things that are possibly missing from shorties. But before I dive into my perspective, get your thoughts, Kate.
Once again, I knew who the killer was about a minute into the show.
Yep.
And my beef with these 40-minute ones is that they are very thin. It's really only like 15 minutes of actual content.
Yep.
I was excited to watch this one anyway once I knew that we were talking about a gay man. Because I wanted to see what kind of reaction old Murph Dog was going to have.
Yeah, or anybody else in the episode, for that matter. Like, when the cops find out. Oh, it's a guy. It's not a girl. Okay.
Who's this girl? Oh, it's a guy? Oh, well, that's okay, that's too. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Oh, is it? Is it okay, too?
Who was the girl?
It was a guy.
He was in with a guy?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay, who was the guy?
Yeah.
Look, I feel like, I don't know. I can't be down on Officer Martin. That's the guy who said that. I suppose better than nothing that his reaction is, okay, well, tell me more. Like, he knows, shut the f*** up about anything he's thinking and just like, this is okay.
Yeah, and that also came through in the interrogation footage we saw later, where he was like pretty understanding and like was trying to get the suspect to confess. And by the only way he could do that was to make him feel comfortable and that he shouldn't be embarrassed to tell him any of the details. And I feel like Dateline did a good job in this episode of showing us that this small town was actually pretty chill and open and like not gonna fall prey to the stereotype of what small town America is, and everyone would be close-minded. And
yeah, the biggest sign of that was coal miner friend Franco Panaccio, when he was like, he liked to wear his shirt down to show off his chest and spray his cologne, and if you thought you looked good in your jeans, he'd tell you so.
Yeah.
And I was like, good for, you know what, good for Brad, good for Mr. Panaccio, and good for the rest of those coal miners.
Yeah, the coal miners seemed to think it was funny, or they liked it. They didn't care, which is great.
Yeah.
It's great to hear.
Yeah.
Brad always made a point to make sure his shirt was always unbuttoned, 3 or 4 buttons down. He would joke around, let you know if he thought you're good looking.
Now, here's when I drop one of my patented Kurt Money bombs. You ready for this?
What did you do?
This case was featured on an episode of The Murder Tapes on HBO Max. It aired on a Murder Tapes episode in 2019, so 4 years ago.
Okay.
They're scooping the hell out of Dateline. And I gotta say this, I'm glad that this came up, and I gotta tell you about my reaction. So the first time I watched that episode of the Murder Tapes, it was right after your victory lap of saying, I knew it was Julius. I knew it was Julius.
Definitely knew from the beginning who did it.
No, you didn't.
And I was watching this ep, and just like the Dateline, they telegraph it at the top. It's going to be this dude crying in the body cam footage, right?
Absolutely.
It's going to be the guy that's crying in the body cam footage saying, no!
He was my best friend. He was my best friend. How many times are you going to tell us he was your best friend?
He's my best friend. Yeah, he's one of my best friends.
And then Detective Aller says that David took my hand and looked me in the eyes and said, this is my best friend in the whole world. You got to find out who did this to him. That's what the bereaved best friend told the detective.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you hear that on the show and you're like, well, I guess the guy did it. Yep. We know that, hands down.
Yep.
Now, this is why I bring it up. I thought of you, and I thought, okay, I do know who the killer is, but I don't watch it. I watch the rest of the episode going, I hope it's not that guy. Because it all is pointing to him, and in this world we live in, I feel like this is the way it goes. I don't know. I just found myself going, please don't let it be that guy that's crying and being all sad. Please don't let it be that.
Because you wanted Dateline to do a better job of throwing us off the scent?
Well, see, I don't know if I hold... Dateline, they're cold open. I mean, Lester said it when he was like, somebody with not just one lover, but two. Like, clearly, we know who he's talking about.
That was a decent Lester.
Oh, thank you.
A killer who betrays not just one lover, but two.
I definitely knew, but I don't know. I don't watch it going, ugh, I know who did it. Stuff like this, I'm going, come on, please let the twist be that it's not this guy. Please let that be the twist.
Well, maybe if this was a regular lengthed episode, it could have had something like that. But with these shorties, it's like, it is what you think it is. There's not enough time for it to be anything other than this.
Yeah, and actually there is... So throughout this ep, I'll point out stuff that was on one and not the other if it's interesting. I'm going to plant this here. Murder Tapes did bring to the table one thing that Dateline didn't touch, and it was wild. Okay, so again, I'm going to be coming after Dateline. Now, conveniently, it's a Murph Dog ep.
Yep.
What did you think about Murph Dog in this ep?
I thought he was fine, except for one line in particular. And I know that you know what line it is.
Yeah, I'm gonna say it. You ready? Was it the line, "This isn't your father's coal miner"?
Brad McGarry was not your father's coal miner.
No.
What was it?
It was when he was interviewing Brad's niece.
Yeah.
She was telling him that she would often confide in David because in high school, she had come out to him.
Yeah.
And when she says that, old Dennis is in disbelief that she could possibly be a lesbian. He says, "You're kidding." And what did he say? And you see her be like, he said, "Cool." Like, what?
And I said, "I'm gay."
No way.
Yeah. And he said,
How'd he swing with that?
You know what? I hate to disappoint you, Kate, but that was not the line. And also her reaction was, he said, "Girl." And then Murph Dog had like a cute little laugh. I don't know. I'm not mad at him for that.
Girl.
Yeah. But I think the "you're kidding" reaction
was a little too genuine.
I laughed out loud. I was like, "What do you mean you're kidding? Is he being sarcastic?" I can't tell, Dennis.
That's fair. Okay, so we open up. We are in Bel Air, Ohio. Funny name for a coal mining town. I'm spelled differently than one that we know.
No. Yes, it's in the Ohio River Valley. It is a small mining town.
Population 4,000.
This is May 2017. David and Sherry Kinney and their 13-year-old daughter go over to David's friend's house to drop off a weed eater. And when they get there, nobody comes to the door. They're all getting freaked out. And David tells his stepdaughter to go to the back door and knock. And it's open or something, so they find their way in. And David makes his way to the basement and sees a dead body and screams, "Call 911. And when we meet with them again, we are on the body cam footage of the arriving officers to a hysterically crying David and Sherry. They're both pretty upset.
David more so.
"I'm trying not to freak out. I'm sorry.
He keeps saying, "He's my best friend. He's my best friend."
Yeah, a lot. He does.
A lot.
And he says, "This shouldn't happen to me.
I'm not supposed to see that, man."
Which we've heard that tone before, too. Mm-hmm. "I'm 48. I can't have a dead husband."
"I'm not supposed to be widowed at 48.
"This shouldn't happen to me. Like, this is about him."
Yeah, of course.
Turns out, it was about him.
It was very much about him. Yeah. And I gotta say something about this body cam footage. Did you see the date on the body cam footage, Kate?
I did. It said, like, 1970-something.
Yes! It said, like, 1-19-1970, which all that means is that the dope who runs it didn't set the time when he took it out of the box, right?
Classic. Deputy Dingus.
Deputy Dingus move and a half right there. I was cracking up.
Same.
Cracking up.
Same.
And I remember seeing on Murder Tapes, they blurred out the body cam, and I was like, oh man, I like seeing that info. And my gut was right. I do like seeing that info because some dummy left the date as 1970.
I bet Murder Tapes was like, "That's distracting and embarrassing. Let's blur it." And Dateline was like, "No, let's leave it. It's embarrassing."
Okay, so Detective Aller is the main guy who, let's play Who Does He Look Like? I feel like he looks like one Mr. Felonious Gru. What do you think?
You think he looks like Gru? No.
The bald guy with the
No, here's the thing. I'm kind of into Gru.
Sexually?
I think he's like, yeah, kind of handsome.
Wow.
So
that's why you're not giving it to me?
Yeah, so I don't agree here.
She's a nut job and I'm not going on any date.
So when the cops are at the scene, their first thought is suicide. They're like, "Where's a gun? Where's a gun?" And this is when Officer Martin, who has a few good lines in this and in Murder Tapes, he's like, "Well, if there's no gun, that certainly doesn't mean it's a suicide." Like, real dramatic-like.
"If it was a suicide, the gun would have to be in the immediate area, and we didn't see it."
But they roll the body over, there's no gun, so they're like, "Oh my god, he's been murdered." So they start to do their good old-fashioned victimology, where they learn about the victim and his life, and where he goes, and what he's up to. And they talk to his family and friends. We find out he's a great guy, he's been out comfortably, gay and proud, forever.
"Was comfortable in his skin."
Yes.
"He was being Brad."
Yes.
Which is awesome, right? Like, he's in a small town in Ohio, a f***ing coal miner, and he's out and proud. That's dope.
A hairdresser turned coal miner, which is wild.
Yeah, yeah.
He wanted to make more money, and he did a career switch.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
He rose through the ranks.
Yeah. One of his friends mentioned that he got transferred to a different mine or something. So I got the impression that he was like doing really well.
Now that friend also said at this new location, he wasn't doing so well because she was saying about how the coworkers were giving him a hard time.
He was having a hard trouble at work.
Anybody in particular?
All of them.
But I don't know if that is because he's gay or because he's new, because the stuff he was complaining about were kind of like rookie hazing things. Like he had to work overtime when he didn't want to. It's kind of like, well, you're new, dude.
Yeah.
I'm only giving the benefit of the doubt to these miners because they all seem pretty chill in the episode.
Yeah. And granted, we only met one or two, but they didn't have anything negative to say about the way he was treated or anything that may have happened down in them mines.
Yeah. And he said this was not in murder tapes, which is crazy to me. But one of the cops happened to be a former coal miner. So they had like an inside man to ask around.
We lucked out. A former detective of ours had left to work at the mine. So we had a pretty good information pipeline into there.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a town of 4,000 people and it's a mining town, I think those odds are pretty good.
Yeah.
Another coincidence was that the chief of police lived on like the same road as the victim, and he had a ring camera or a security camera, and that footage came in handy later on. But they didn't have to go too far to get it. You just go to your boss, the chief of police.
Yeah. Which is, like, Murder Tapes did mention that was the chief of police's security cam, which I think is a real missed op. But this is why, I feel like this is one of those things that, why I'm so fascinated by true crime, is seeing dummies get busted, and the things that bust them that they have no control over. It's just like, these are the chances you take when you decide to murder somebody, that the one person on the street with a security cam is the chief of police, and he's gonna have no problem handing over that footage.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just love seeing that, where it's like, hey dude, you play with fire.
Yeah, I hope that it's enough to deter people from doing these murders, but clearly isn't.
Yeah, it's true. And they did say it was like, they weren't as prevalent then. 2017. The last one we saw that, they said it was in 2010. And I feel like the difference now is this, they're more affordable now.
Yes. They're everywhere now.
Now look, I have things growing out of my gutters that I do not know what they are. So I'm one to f***ing talk here. But that chief of police.
Yes, the paint on that house.
Tape off those lines, bro. Right?
I think maybe that B-roll that Dateline grabbed was very recent and in the middle of a repainting situation, because the blue paint looked brand new. And they hadn't gone back over and done the trim in the white. But it was a mess.
It was an absolute mess. Now, if I'm the chief of police watching this Dateline, the first shot they show of it, they crop it out. I'm going, whew, thank you. But then they go back to it, and it's all about the messed up paint part.
It's funny, because it's a cute house, so you notice it. It's not like a trailer or some kind of, like, shitty, dilapidated-looking house. It's a cute little craftsman with a terrible paint job.
Yeah. So the detectives are talking to people that know Brad. We learn that he's had a few relationships, but he hasn't had one in a while. But there is a mystery man. There's someone that he's been deeply in love with forever that he has an on-again, off-again with.
Though Skyler told police the relationship had been going on for years, the cousins just knew him as DJ.
And, like, even the day before the murder, there was, like, a family get-together cookout. And one of the cousins, Skyler had a real toot. Skyler in the interrogation room.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Skyler came in hot that day.
She sure did.
She looked like Sarah Paulson.
Okay.
And she was fired up. She was like mad, even though the cop was being super chill and nice. And also like nothing was wrong. Like she wasn't in trouble. The cop wasn't angry, but she was fired up.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I thought it was funny.
Same. Because she just, okay, I'm his cousin. We've been friends for life. All right.
Okay. Do you understand? Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah. She waits for the cop to go, okay.
Yeah. He's like, okay.
Yeah.
We're cousins.
Okay.
Brad's my first cousin. Grew up together. All right.
Okay.
But she's the one that we find out that Brad left the cookout unannounced to go take a nap, quote unquote, which is their parlance for knock them boots.
He was insinuating that they were having sex. It was romantic.
I like it. I might use it.
Taking a nap?
And
that's good.
As someone who naps every day, people are going to think, I'm just crushing it over here. Just a slew of dudes hanging out in here.
Yep.
But really?
Yep.
I'm just napping.
So he runs off to go with this mystery man. And I love that also they point out he did not even eat dessert. Like when they were talking about him blowing out of there.
To be fair, that's when you know it's like, oh, he had places to be.
I don't even think he stayed for dessert.
We also hear, this is another great Murph Dog line, is when they're talking about Brad and his style in his home and whatnot. Now, not only the Cracker Barrel thing, but first he goes, antiques was his catnip.
Oh, antiques, that was his thing.
Huh? That was his thing.
That was his catnip.
That was good, right?
Yeah.
But let's talk about this Cracker Barrel thing, because both Murder Tapes and Dateline both compare it to Cracker Barrel.
He had a Cracker Barrel house.
His house was like a Cracker Barrel?
The decor.
Kind of woody and rough and...
Yeah, it looked like a Cracker Barrel.
Brad collected what's referred to as country art, kind of things you'd see at a Cracker Barrel.
I don't know a lot of gay men who would be down with that style.
Yeah, I mean, it is hardcore Cracker Barrel.
He's got the wagon wheel on the wall.
Yeah.
He's got those like steel Texas stars everywhere, even though it's Ohio. It's very country. It's like handmade little granny curtains everywhere.
Yeah.
It's a choice.
Yeah.
If that's what he was into, okay.
So be it.
Go ahead, Brad.
Murder Tapes was making a big point of like, oh, maybe it's a burglar gone wrong because things were awry. But then they're like, wait, they're only awry in this small section and the rest of the house is fine. Like, so what is this? And this feels like a good point for me to, I gotta make a selling point for you on Murder Tapes. Okay, Kate?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is not like a Forensic Files where like, if you said you started watching it, I'd like probably run to you from where I am right now to high five you and go, woohoo! If you don't watch Murder Tapes, I'm cool with it. But I'm just gonna present this. The premise of the show is that it's all based, like, 60% of the footage is body cam of the stuff happening as it happens. And then the rest is like talking heads like a normal show. Now, the appeal of this show is that, one, with Dateline as the exception, true crime shows should only be a half hour long. When they're an hour, it's for the fluff. And there's a lot of fluff that I'm not interested in hearing or repeat stuff from the first act of the episode. So it should really only be 22 minutes, but they're not. Now, the cool thing about Murder Tapes is they fill that not with fluff, but just more legit footage of body cam moments, okay? What I love about that is it humanizes cops, not in the best way though, because it really points out that they are just people. They are just dudes with a job, because they'll show them arriving to a scene and the amount of, even this one, they're being all judgmental talking about how cluttered Brad's house was. So you can hear him on the Murder Tapes like talking shit a little.
Spare bedroom, it looks like cluttered like everything else.
And then there's another one where the two cops are arguing about who has to go pick up the bag to see if there's a body in there. And the guy goes, well, technically I have seniority. So you hold the flashlight.
I got seniority. I'll do the light.
Like, there's stuff like that happening. And there's a lot of dudes and bros being thrown around. Like, it's just very, I don't know.
Charming.
It's interesting. Well, one, it gave me a lot of really cool body cam info that I'll bring up later at the end of this ep. But I just thought I'd put it out there as a plug. Look, I feel like I slum it more with true crime shows than you do. There's a world of true crime that you don't party with that I do. This is one of them.
Yeah. I only spend my time with the cream of the crop.
Yeah. Yep. Which is, of course, Dateline, and also, like, feature docs. You do, like, docs or, like, miniseries kind of things.
I do, yeah.
Me, I watch every inch of it. I say, gimme, gimme, gimme. Murder Tapes is one of them. 9 seasons. I'm into it.
Good, honey.
All right, we proceed. Oh, wait! Oh, my God! There was a shot, Kate, of Brad's living room where the TV was. You see what movie was in that drawer?
No.
Because I did. Exorcist 3. Now, what's the significance of Exorcist 3? It's a little true crime triv that you should know. It was in Dahmer. Well, there, I just gave it away.
What are we gonna do?
Told you. We're gonna hang out and watch a movie.
Dahmer would show Exorcist 3 to his victims before it was grub time. They'd watch Exorcist 3 together.
Huh.
It's a good movie.
Look at me and tell me what you see.
One thing that Murder Tapes did better is this Scotty Butler business. And they just presented it better than Dateline, but they did, like, Brad had a hookup guy that was like 22 or something. And this is who the cops are suspicious of before they get the real scoop.
But they go and they meet with him and they find out he was in prison when the murder took place.
The best alibi.
So he didn't do it.
Yep. And he was bummed too. He's like crying and stuff. He's sad.
Brad seemed really great.
He did. Seemed like a good dude. One thing that we both love and hate, but we got to talk about it, is they gave us the personal story.
Like Andrea in the pool.
All right. And this story took place at Walmart. He had questions about the fish.
And he got on the intercom and was being all goofy, like, customer assistance in the fish aisle.
Yeah. And he was like, I need help with these fishies.
It's cute.
Yeah, it was cute.
Yelling for help himself.
Over here on 3, yo.
Yeah. Somebody help me at the fishies, please.
So Dateline is talking about the Scotty Butler guy. And Murph Dog says, and thanks to digging around social media or utilizing social media, they found out that this was Scotty Butler. Wrong. In murder tapes, there's Wendy, the girl in the green with the kids, saying, then Scotty Butler came into his life.
That's when he got messed up with Scotty Butler.
So like they found that out from an interrogation. It was not from some doing their job on social medias.
Right. Again, it was because someone told them something, not because they are really good investigators.
So they go talk to Scotty. It's not him. Then they start hearing about the DJ guy. And that's when they put it together that DJ is David Kenny, a.k.a. the crying guy, the self-proclaimed best friend in the world, the one who was dead set. You gotta find out who killed my best friend, okay? That's the guy who did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which makes rewatching the body cam stuff, I mean, aggravating and also funny because it's like, look at this guy putting on this. But here's the deal. David and Brad are more than best friends. They've been on and off again lovers for years.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a bummer in a multitude of ways. So on the surface, like, as they say, we go on vacations together. My kids call him Uncle Brad. It seems like a good scenario, but you go below and it's like, these two are hooking up on the vacations.
David's cheating on his wife.
The wife has no f***ing clue.
She has no idea. It sounds like Brad wanted to be more than just a hookup. They were really in love, but, you know, he's married and didn't want to leave his family. And all around heartbreaking situation. David's point of view, I don't know if I can really believe what he said because he lies three separate times in his interrogation before we get to what sounds like the truth. At first, he says he was out running errands and then he was back with his wife by like 2 o'clock on the day of the murder. Then they dig a little deeper and he admits, okay, no, you're right. I was. Then they find that his cell phone, which he willingly gave them.
They're plugging it in while he's still talking to the detective.
He's sitting in the interrogation room and they are looking at that phone and they find, not only do they find texts between he and Brad that show clearly they were not just friends.
Yeah.
They also track, they also use the GPS on his phone that shows he was at Brad's house at the time of the murder.
Right.
So then they confront him with that and he's like, well,
actually,
okay, you're right. I wasn't home with my wife. I went to Brad's, but he wasn't even home. And then they're like,
and then?
Yeah, actually, that's not true either because they have the security camera footage from the chief of police down the street and they see David driving his car towards Brad's. Then like 30 minutes later, they see Brad's car drive by.
Brad pulls up in his Beamer.
And then like 30 minutes after that, you see David leave.
Right. So now that David knows that the cops know this, he says, well, actually, you know what? The truth of it is, Brad came home with another man who was like kind of dirty. And they went in the garage and I heard a gunshot and I was so scared. Okay. I was scared out of my wits. I don't know where this dirty man is, but he did the killing.
He starts telling me about Brad pulls up with this dirty looking guy I've never seen before.
And then the cops are like, actually, Brad's car was packed full of shit. There's no place for another passenger to sit in that car. So there was no other guy.
No, there wasn't. And that was...
He's like, okay, well, actually...
Yeah. Then he went with the old standard, which I hate so much. But before we get to his defense that he lands on, I got to give credit to the cops for laying out the, well, you say someone was in the front seat, but the front seat, he has all of his stuff there from bringing back from the wedding. So how could that be true? That's one of those quick lies where they don't think about the next level of it. The criminal doesn't. And it's just like, once you present that lie, it's like, you're fucking lying. You are lying through your teeth right now.
Yeah. To be fair, they did show a picture of the front seat and it was like one thing on the seat. You could have just had that on the floor and then got out and moved it to the seat. Like someone could have sat there.
I would agree with you, but there was stuff on the floor too. So that bag, if somebody was sitting there, would have been moved to the back. That's what I think.
Maybe, yeah.
But it wasn't, but you're right. It wasn't like a stack of presents. It was like a plastic bag with something in it.
I've been in cars where they're just packed full of shit and you sit anyway.
Yeah. You ever ridden in the J-Dub?
I don't think I have. No.
You never did. Well, R.I.P. J-Dub now.
Because when we went on our date, you borrowed a car.
I did. Wait, is that when I rented the car?
No, you borrowed a car from Marcos and Asher.
Oh my God, you're right.
Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you listening,
yeah.
Kurt and I went on a pretend date, and it was not romantic. We were both practicing for getting on the dating apps. This was like when?
09.
09.
09, absolutely.
Wow.
It's well before any of my upcoming spells after that.
Yeah, I don't even think apps existed. It was eHarmony, Match.com,
yep,
and OkCupid.
Yeah.
And we were practicing how to go on dates.
But also, you gave me a report card that we can't locate today. But on that report card was my phone buzzed and I didn't look at it and I just put it in my pocket. And you were like, that was a good move.
That is a good move.
So they've checked his phone and they're confronting him with this stuff. And each time he has a new lie. And the one that he finally lands on is good old fashioned self-defense. He says that Brad came at him, okay? And he had to do that. Now, Brad, we must say, is maybe 5'4", and this guy is 6'7". I mean, they call him a huge man in the thing.
The two of them together in those photos, he is towering over him.
David says that Brad was like slapping him around a little. And I'm like, dude, he'd have to hop to do that. Like, I'm not buying that either. He was not a threat to you. He was not a threat.
It was not self-defense. He said Brad gave him an ultimatum that he had to leave his wife or else. I don't buy that.
Well, this is when I come in with extra info that I don't know why the fuck Dateline didn't use it or play it, okay? Because I'm going to blow your mind right now when I tell you that murder tapes had the deleted voicemails from Brad from David's phone. And let me tell you, they were profanity-filled and they were threatening. They were like, I'm sick of you breaking my heart. And they play this in the app.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You not only broke a promise, you lied. And then you have the balls to tell me. That is your last lie and your last goddamn broken promise to me. You're a
That would be enough to get yourself murdered.
Well,
I had no idea. I mean, I'm not saying he was justified in what he did, but that's aggressive. And he may have felt like he had to take him out because that was the only way out of his lie.
I see what you're saying. I point to it more as rock solid proof that it wasn't self-defense, that it was premeditated, that David went over there with the idea to silence this guy because he was going to bust him to his wife. It's heartbreaking. But why didn't Dateline use that?
I don't know. Maybe it didn't fit in their 40-minute runtime.
Well, the other thing Murder Tapes did is they had a real red herring where there was another murder a few days later.
No way. In a town of 4,000?
And they were thinking, yeah, yeah. What are you? Is this sarcasm?
That's a lot of homicides.
Yeah.
In a town of 4,000 people.
Yeah, so they present that in Murder Tapes as like, well, maybe they're connected. And for that one, there was another security cam where like a guy came out and returned fire and he was carrying his bloody friend. And actually, when those cops showed up, when the EMS showed up to that scene, they had footage of that as well. And you can hear this poor guy. I mean, look, RIP this guy. He died en route to the hospital. But you could hear him going, where the f*** is the ambulance? Like, he's just like, come on!
Oh my God.
Anyway.
Brutal.
So for Dateline to not use the voicemails and for them to not mention this guy at all, it makes me wonder, like, if this had been a full-length episode, would they have talked about those things?
They would have.
Is this something that's discussed? Like, potentially maybe that was cut when this became a Thursday episode.
Could be.
Because, I mean, this is going to be interesting for nobody, but there's a point in the first act where Murph Dog is like he's throwing to a commercial. Like, it's how they do their teases. And then the episode still goes and keeps going. Like, I don't... Do you know what I'm talking about?
And a secret, as we all know, can be dangerous.
I would love to get an inside scoop on this, because those are two things that I think should be in there, but if they told me that said, look, that was in the two-hour version, but we had to cut it.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. Look, for them, when they do something that another show has done years later, I'm looking for ways in which Dateline pluses it up. And they did have some pretty killer minor stock footage, so... They get points for that.
And of course, Murph Dog,
yep,
he's going to add a little flavor.
Yeah, he is.
You're kidding. A lesbian?
No way.
Yeah.
So this is the last bit that I have for Murder Tapes that I think is interesting in relation to this case. So it's still the same footage of him in the interrogation room. You got detective there talking to David, and they actually go get his wife so that David can tell her that he's had an affair with this family best friend and that he murdered him.
Yep.
You got to break that to his wife, this poor woman. Now,
her reaction was so heartbreaking to watch. I think it's how a lot of people would react, where she's like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Yeah, and like, that's not you. That's not you.
She's like mad, in disbelief, then mad again, and then so sad that her friend is dead. And then angry that her husband has now ruined their lives.
You're
She knows he's going away forever, leaving her and their kids.
Yeah.
And all of that in the span of like 2 minutes.
Yeah. It's wild to think that they have on tape the moment when a husband is telling his wife that he's gay and a murderer. It's like we have that moment.
Yep.
What are our kids gonna think?
So this is why I've got to give Sherry the All-Star Award, because she had to go through this. But not only that, she's also been all over TV for years. Like her darkest moment is she like turns away from her husband so she can cry and she doesn't know it. She's turning directly to the camera.
Yeah.
Right? So like the whole world knows her. I mean, everybody watches it is on her side. Absolutely. But I got to give her All-Star because like she has to live with this now.
And not to mention that David had their stepdaughter.
Yes.
See the body and traumatized her.
Like he brought her there knowing there's a dead body in there, right? I mean, that's cold.
That's traumatizing.
God, that poor wife.
Sherry Kinney, now divorced, she told us she's found a new love and is focusing on raising her three children.
And I'll say, in murder tapes, they showed when she first came in and this coward, punk David, his first thing is, okay, I'm going to tell you something, but I need to know that you're on my side. I need to know that you support me.
I need to know that you have my back.
He kept saying that.
And then she's like, are you kidding me right now? She was not having it.
His first reaction in the murder tapes, he just said, look, there was another gun in the house when I went over there. And they didn't show the part that Dateline did where it's like, and we slept together. But you see in Dateline, in the body cam footage, she's like, I want to know details. I want to know when was the last time. And David is only saying it's been a while.
It's been a while. It's been a while. Trust me.
I think that's because if he said it was a month ago, Sherry's reaction would be, we haven't had sex since then. I feel like he's had sex with Brad more recently than he has his wife, is what I feel that was leading to.
Also, classic dude mentality that when he was in that interrogation with the cops in the beginning, they're like, when was the last time you were with Brad? And he was like, oh, it's been a long time, man. Like, it's been a while. Like, I want to say like at least 3 weeks or a month.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
That's a while.
Yeah.
Men are trash.
Yeah, they are. Look, he's going to try up until he can. He's going to try and make this not his fault or like make it that he's not the bad guy. And sorry, bud. Now, look, I can say as someone who had decades being very confused about sexual stuff until I finally realized it's nobody's business. And I am who I am.
Good, honey.
I feel for a guy who's in the closet and stuff, but you gotta get it out of it before it hits this. Like, this is unforgivable. I just, like, what he does to his family, I don't know. It just all, it f***ing sucks, man.
Yeah.
The Dateline kind of did it, where a guy's like, the irony is that the guy didn't want this to come out, and instead, his friend's dead, and the news did come out. And then the guy says nobody cared anyway.
I told him, I said, you know, what year is it? No one cares. You like dudes or chicks, and no one cares.
And I gotta say, maybe in your 2017, that's true, or our 2023 or whatever. But, like, I feel like unless you were born in the 2010s, you have years and years of tragic backstory in your head of dealing with like people being anti-gay. Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like when people say like, oh, who cares now? It's like, you. Where were you when I was 13 or whatever? Because you would have f***ing cared then.
Yeah.
Whew.
About a 9 on the tension scale, Rube.
On that note, I think it's list time. Kate, you got a list for me?
Kate's unnamed list. Kate's unnamed list. This was a small town. The kind of town where things like this just don't happen. Although apparently it happened again a couple days later with another homicide. So
yep.
This was a very small town, population 4,000. And then there was a moment where someone started crying and then said, I'm sorry.
Sure did. It happened.
Yep.
It happened. I took a little note. I said, time code, please. Ding, ding, ding.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Don't let that crown fall because... Sorry.
Now it's time for Kurt's Kick-Ass List.
Kick-Ass List. Kick-Ass List.
Here's the deal. I've got one that hit, and it hit f***ing hard.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Because not only did Murph Dog say signs of a struggle.
Cluttered, but no signs of a struggle.
He said it twice.
Boom.
There were no signs of a struggle in the basement.
Signs of a struggle. Ugh! That felt good. That felt good.
Signs of a struggle.
All right, well, on that note, I'm Kurt Money.
I'm Kateline.
I'm Lester Holt. For all of us, I'm Lester Holt. Good night.
No way.
Yeah.